The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my well-dressed, well-spoken colleague. That's why they call him the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to tell you why it's love at second sight, sometimes for NFL defensive coordinators. Tonight on the College Basketball Board, the Miller's Tale is not something out of Chaucer, but a sad lament for one coach facing some tough adjustments. And are all these kids from South Florida really John Denver fans? We're going to explain what that means in Money Time.
I'll take the under of West Virginia players as John Denver fans. What do you make the number? 1.5? 2? 5?
Before they got on campus or after they've been there? Once you're there, you sort of fall in love with it.
Sure.
Almost heaven.
Come on, let's have you sing it. West Virginia, mountain mama. Come on, Dave. Take me home. Sing it with me.
That's
country
really bad.
Road.
That
all right.
Really
and off. It's first
really
take time.
Bad.
Yeah. Time. Oh, my God. I can't believe we just did that on air live.
I can't believe you just did that.
Yeah. We did. You were singing and swaying back and forth. It felt like a hayride, Dave. You know, me and you in the back, singing back and forth, swinging.
Yeah, we really need to pick this up.
First take. What do you got for me?
This first take is an easy one. And you'll know it as we've lamented the way some of the bowl results have come in over the past couple of days. We got to start with Virginia Tech, Michigan. And if you didn't see the game, very one-sided. 2-1 first downs, over 2-1 total offense for Virginia Tech. Got to the point where we talked to an odds maker this morning. We said, okay, if the only thing you had ever done was watch this game, what's the line when the same two teams meet next week on the same field? Figured, 7.5, 8 to be conservative. The box score, been about an 11 or 12 point box score win for Virginia Tech. But of course, if you have Tech, you don't get the money. You only get a refund. Kind of a shame for as many things as they did right during that game. But interestingly enough, the Tech failure is where we're not accustomed to seeing it. Frank Beamer's special teams. Three different times, Michigan's get scores directly off of failures by those Beamer special teams. Certainly not the way you would have expected to lose that game. Teddy, we know you brought Kara's cookies in here this morning, which we really like. And good luck for her wanting her leftovers back. Did you bring any sports with you?
Yeah, of course I brought some sports. And my first take for a Wednesday, we need to talk about the Western Conference in the NBA. Read a great column this morning by John Hollinger, who writes some pretty good stuff for ESPN. And he was talking about some of the faults of the leading contenders in the Western Conference. You know, if you've watched this show over the past couple of weeks, we've detailed some of those faults. We've talked about the L.A. Lakers issues that they have. We talked about some of the problems that Oklahoma City faces over the course of the current campaign. And we look at some of the other contenders, the L.A. Clippers. We talked about how they've struggled to play defense. Haven't talked much about Memphis so far because there's been no reason to talk a whole lot about Memphis. The Grizzlies, besieged with injuries. Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, and the two guys who are probably underappreciated when it comes to market value in terms of Daryl Arthur and Xavier Henry coming off the bench. So they're missing really three or four key contributors right now, even though Conley got back in the lineup last night. The Spurs just lost Manu Ginobili. So who's Ginobili? Ginobili, you know what I mean. The point is, who's the best in the West right now? Who's the team to beat in the Western Conference? And I'm going to make a case here for a team that I cashed a ticket with last night. That would be the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers, well, they're not a sexy team. They don't have the superstar. They don't play in a major market. They weren't considered to be the young up-and-comers like Oklahoma City was coming into the campaign. What do they have? Well, they've got low post defense and rebounding with Marcus Camby and Kurt Thomas. They've got a low post scorer in LaMarcus Aldridge. They have talented wings, guys who can slash, bring it to the hole. Gerald Wallace, Nicholas Batum. They've got the perimeter sharpshooters, Wes Matthews and Jamal Crawford, a huge free agent pickup. And they've got the steady hand at the point in Ray Felton. When you look at the top eight in any team in the West's rotation, Portland stands up well with any of them. And I wouldn't be shocked to see the Blazers make a little bit of noise, both straight up and against the spread over the course of the next couple of months. Now let's shift focus to Market Watch. It's time to talk about the college basketball conference seasons, which really begin in earnest tonight. And of course, our approach changes as conference play begins. We break down college basketball into four separate seasons. You have the non-conference games, then the conference games, then the conference tournaments, which is my single favorite, you know, 10-day period of the entire college basketball season. And then, of course, the postseason plays, whereas the big dance or the little dances. So in each different grouping, in each different part of the season, we need to make adjustments. And for College Hoops conference play, the adjustments start tonight. And this gives us a good chance to bring in an email. Here's a letter from Bo, who sent us an email yesterday. And let's discuss some of the topics that he brings up. Quote, after watching Charlotte's last two games closely, I've identified this team as a team I want to go against for the rest of the year. I've made this decision based on their personnel and abilities. They are currently 7-5 straight up, 4-2-1 against the spread, with a couple of impressive results. They beat Davidson, they played Memphis tight. On the surface, this looks pretty good, and in turn brings me value betting against them. I know the A-10 is supposed to be loaded this year. What's the best strategy to take in maximizing my profit betting against the 49ers? Bet against them in all 17 conference games? Bet the money line on the other team in all their road games only? Thoughts? Dave.
The difficulty you're going to have in conference play is extending any strategy to 17 games. We tend to think of strategies in two or three games, and that the play on teams that we have in our pockets right now, the play against teams we have in our pockets, there's a short shelf life. There's a reason for it, and we'll talk about it a lot on this show over the course of the next 2 months. The college basketball line is anchored by what we call mathematical power ratings. And if you're not familiar with a couple of these folks, Ken Pomeroy, KenPom.com, Jeff Sagarin at the USA Today, they've been doing great mathematical ratings for a long time. A lot of people follow those ratings, and a lot of people emulate those ratings. So what you're going to find now that we're in conference play, very rarely is any line going to be more than 2 points off of where those ratings say it should be. Kind of a nice courtesy for the odds makers. So if you've got a team that you think is undervalued that you want to play on, or overvalued you want to play against, those corrections are going to happen pretty quickly. A case like Charlotte, yeah, we actually agree with you. There might be a little bit of value for the first two or three games. But here's the problem. If you play against Charlotte the first three and cash all three, good luck with the rest of them, because those markets are going to adjust, not only from the point spread aspect of them not covering, but you'll see in the Pomeroy and the Sagarin ratings, they'll start to get that evening point. So, yes, step in early, but don't expect it to be a very long run.
Now, see, I'm not sure I agree with you 100% on this, Dave, because, you know, we saw it even last year. Big teams, major conference teams, Michigan State, what'd they lose, 11 in a row against the spread last year? I remember there was 1 year I was betting against Iowa. I cashed 13 consecutive tickets in Big Ten play. Another year that Missouri State was my team, and they were home underdogs 8 times in conference play, and they cashed all 8. You'll see a lot of adjustments early on when it comes to the power ratings. And you'll also see major adjustments early on in the conference season. But if you see a team, whether it's Charlotte, and again, Charlotte's a prime team that should fit into a strategy that makes money for more than just a few games, just because they're not a major market team, they have no stars, they're not going to be on TV, and there's not going to be anything other than the adjusting final scores and the numbers themselves to force any downward pressure on the 49ers in terms of their power rating. There's not going to be any outside factors into the mix. So if the number is off 2 or 3 points right now, it could stay off for 2 or 3 points for weeks and weeks on end. But the first few weeks of conference play, the betting markets pay a lot of attention to teams, whether they're moving up or moving down, and you will see adjustments. The best time for starting to ride some of these streaks can be late January, early February. And I'm telling you, you can find ways to ride those streaks 4, 5, even 6 weeks to close out the rest of the regular campaign. So my advice, if you want to bet against Charlotte, that's exactly what I would do. Bet against Charlotte religiously every game until proven otherwise. And once you see the betting market has caught up, okay, that's time to stop. But until that time comes, you see something, fire away, and fire away repeatedly.
Yeah, we do like the idea that you stay in play until they catch up, or until, you know, someone sees, okay, this number's wrong, we have to adjust for it. Charlotte's a good example. The books won't get hurt that much if Charlotte opens up 0-4, 0-5. But when Teddy talks about these long streaks, yeah, if you've got 300 teams in Division I, there'll be a few outliers every year. But here's an interesting study to do at the end of the season. Look at how many teams in conference play are within what we call the 60-40 range. Very few teams will cover more than 60% of their conference games or fewer than 40. You're going to get a few outliers because you have such a big market sample out there. But so many times what we end up doing through the years, the teams we're playing on in January, we're actually playing against come February when the markets go a little bit too far in the other direction.
Great question, Bo. Thanks for sending it in. And if you want your question to be read and discussed on the air, real easy. Send it in. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter and ask us questions that way. The address, @VegasSportsDay. That's one word. And there's absolutely no reason. Look at you. You're on the internet right now. What are you doing? Get involved in the covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now. covers.com/posting forum.
When we come back, we've talked about Tim Tebow a few times on this show. Everybody else does. But here's something interesting. For all these people in Denver that want him back at quarterback next year, maybe no one wants Tebow back in the Denver uniform more than the other AFC West defensive coordinators. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. It's time for the postmortem. We take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Last week in our NFL Money Time edition on Friday, we brought up a significant issue in terms of properly breaking down Tim Tebow and the Denver offense. While Tebow was not as successful as the media portrayals, even when the Broncos were winning games, there were some key aspects to the success that he did have. This was a unique offense being run, no question. One that not only did opposing defenses lack familiarity with, but also the fact that very few teams had a prototype player like Tim Tebow that they could simulate what Denver was trying to do on the practice field. So pregame preparation was more difficult. But that also raises the question, what happens when teams got a second look at that Denver playbook with Tebow? And on Sunday, we got some answers.
This is a dream for NFL defensive coordinators. A simple playbook with only a couple of options and not very good personnel running it. So what happens the second time around? An awful lot of food for thought. There were two games that we can chart here. A game at San Diego and a game against Kansas City this past Sunday. Note that the San Diego game was almost five full quarters. Denver won it with 33 seconds remaining in overtime. So we've got nine quarters in which the opposing defensive coordinators had a second look at Tebow and the Broncos. How did they fare? One touchdown in nine quarters. And that was on a drive that started in San Diego territory. Now let's break the other numbers down. If we do it over nine quarters, it prorates to 273 yards per game. Number 31, next to last in the NFL. Yards per play, 4.4, next to last in the entire NFL. Tim Tebow's passer rating, 52.4. That's 34th in the NFL, which is pretty bad because there aren't 34 teams. So there were backup quarterbacks who actually had better passer rating. And he wasn't even close to the guy at number 33. Tebow's 52.4 in those games. It's 65.4 for Blaine Gabbert, who had the worst passer rating in the NFL this year. And even Tebow's running the second time around, 28 carries, 2.9 yards per carry. That shows you how easy it was to break down this Denver defense once the other side knew what was coming. So here's the problem that John Elway and others face going forward to next year. Not only did these coordinators all have a chance to see the playbook, if you bring Tebow back next year as your starting quarterback, all three of those division teams will also go out and put someone on their squad that can emulate Tebow in practice as well. It's going to be awfully difficult for them going forward. Jordy Nelson had a hell of a game on Sunday. 9 catches, 162 yards, 3 touchdowns. They were all from Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn had a hell of a game on Sunday. He threw for over 500 yards and 6 touchdown passes. Bart Starr never did that in a Packer uniform. Brett Favre never did that in a Packer uniform. Aaron Rodgers never did that in a Packer uniform. Is this just one of these final game of the seasons, everyone's loose, it's touch football in the street yard settings where we take those numbers, maybe ignore them, say, look, this was a fluke, didn't have to be that way, the other side didn't care? Or is there something in there that's actually important that we need to not only factor in long term, but factor in perhaps as early as this Saturday?
Look, the Lions were trying on Sunday. This wasn't some meaningless Week 17 game. They were trying hard. A win, and they would have been playing against the Giants this week. Small underdogs in that ballgame, probably in a similar range to what we see the Giants and Atlanta. You know, maybe the Giants are 3, 3.5, maybe 4. Instead, they lost, and they're forced to play in New Orleans at the Superdome against the Saints, which is arguably the toughest thing to do in the NFL right now. And, of course, the point spread reflects that, with Detroit in that plus 10.5, plus 11 range as we speak. Okay, so the Lions weren't completely healthy on defense, and we're going to update some of that information in terms of the Lions, the status of the Lions defenders, when we get to our Insider Six-Pack in our next segment. And yes, they might have been taken by surprise a little bit by how aggressive Green Bay was with Matt Flynn behind center. Flynn came out firing downfield, and maybe that wasn't the game plan that Detroit was looking for. But it may go a little bit beyond that, and to have the ability or the moxie to step up when it matters most. 3 times in the second half, the Lions scored a touchdown to take the lead and perhaps grab a hold of that number 5 seed. What happened after those 3 touchdowns? Well, 80 yards in 4 plays. Flynn to Jordy Nelson for the touchdown. Lordy, lordy, look at Jordy. 69 yards in 7 plays, Flynn to Donald Driver for the touchdown. 80 yards in 8 plays, Flynn to JerMichael Finley for the touchdown. Yes, there are injuries. Yes, there are scheme issues. There's also the psychological deflation that comes into play when a big win is within your grasp, but your defense just can't get a stop to earn it. And nobody in that defensive huddle was able to step up and make a play. Here's a quote from Lions head coach Jim Schwartz. Quote, "They couldn't have played worse. We covered poorly. We tackled poorly. We played man-to-man poorly. We blitzed poorly. We played zone poorly." We bring this up because the psyche of this defense may be one of the biggest stories of all on this weekend's NFL card.
Is there any hope for that Detroit defense going into the Superdome against Drew Brees? We're going to talk about that coming up in our Insider Six-Pack. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
It's time to pop the top on today's Insider Six-Pack. Let's start with that Detroit Lions defense. We're going to break down Saturday's NFL playoff games in tomorrow's Money Time segment. But let's start at least setting the stage. We just talked about Detroit's defensive breakdowns against Green Bay, but there could be a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel for that Lions defense. Both safety Louis Delmas and cornerback Aaron Berry have returned to practice, which helps, theoretically, shore up the secondary. Here's the issue for Delmas. You know, this is a guy who played well enough to be a Pro Bowl alternate, but he last saw action against Green Bay on Thanksgiving Day, and there cannot help but be a little bit of rust in his game. He's certainly going to be an upgrade over replacements Chris Harris and John Wendling, but he may need a little bit of time to get back to full speed, and you're going to need a safety at full speed against this potent New Orleans offense.
Also bringing issues this week in the playoffs, the Steelers. Rashard Mendenhall, leading rusher, gone for the year. He's going to have to be replaced by Isaac Redmond. So, you know, a decent guy as a spot player, but not really someone opposing defenses have to respect as a full-time ball carrier. Not as good a receiver out of the backfield as well. Problem, though, that they may face the most is on defense. They've announced now that safety Ryan Clark will not play. Clark suffers from what's called sickle cell trait, which means that he has real difficulty at high altitudes. He did try to play a game in Denver once, back in 2007. Almost lost his life because of it. Gallbladder and spleen both had to be removed. So Clark will not play. Now, Clark leads the team in tackles. He's been on the field for over 1,000 snaps, played every down in 11 of 16 games. His replacement is going to be Ryan Mundy, only his third career start. The bonus for Mundy is it's nice to have Troy Polamalu, you know, right next to you to help to set things up. But when a big part of your game plan is going to be tackles from the safety position, which you've got to make the way Denver runs their offense, Clark's going to be missed.
The dismal opening to the season for the New Jersey Nets. They won on opening night against Washington. They trailed by 21 in the second quarter of that game and then rallied back to have the lead by the end of the third. Of course, that was against the Wizards, and a lot of teams are going to beat the Wizards this year. In fact, every team that Washington has played has found a way to beat them. Since that win over Washington, the Nets have now lost five straight, and four of them have come in double-digit fashion. We're getting word that Deron Williams is not going to suit up for New Jersey tonight. Williams, of course, their starting point guard, their only superstar. He suffered a rib injury on Monday versus Indiana. And let's not forget, this is a team that's already playing without their starting center, Brook Lopez, and their starting power forward, Chris Humphries, who's not going to be able to play tonight. Make whatever Kardashian joke you so choose. Bottom line is Humphries been a double-double.
We were above that.
No, we're not above Kardashian jokes. It's just the best thing about Chris Humphries.
I'm above that.
Yeah, but the best thing about Humphries, for sure, was that at the first home game for the Nets when the crowd started chanting, Reggie Bush, which I thought was pretty funny. That's the home crowd. But the bottom line is no Lopez, no Humphries, no D-Will tonight for New Jersey. In the absence of Williams, the starting point guard is going to be the rookie, Marshawn Brooks. He can be an explosive scorer, but as a distributor, well, he played over 31 minutes in the loss to Indiana on Monday and had a grand total of zero assists in that ballgame.
In the NBA this year, with a lot of the injury settings the way they are, we're going to be using the phrase review and preview an awful lot. Maybe the best example of all, Manu Ginobili in the Spurs. Ginobili broke a bone in his shooting hand, going to be out for at least a month. Awkward time for this to happen. San Antonio, beginning tonight, will play 19 games in 30 days. And remember that even in this season, they still have that same rodeo trip. It starts in early February and is going to run through nine consecutive road games. They certainly want him back before that starts. Here's going to be the issue. There's probably no one better at player management than Greg Popovich in terms of getting his team to flow over the course of the season. What Popovich will do, we believe, is isolate on games where he knows he can win, go get them, and try to tread water till Ginobili comes back. We saw a little bit of this earlier. If you saw their game against Houston last week, they fell down big early. Tim Duncan didn't play at all in the second half. They lost the game by 20. Popovich knows, here's what I've got to do for this frenzy of a schedule. So when we say review and preview, we're going to preview the Spurs games carefully, try to isolate those spots where they are going to go out and play hard, but make sure when you review, instead of just blindly putting San Antonio scores and stats in your databases, if it's a night where Pops took the second half off and let it go, those stats aren't going to carry a lot of value for you. Review and preview.
Speaking of review and preview and making the proper adjustments to your databases, let's talk about the circumstances for tonight's second consecutive road game, back-to-back road game for the Houston Rockets. Now, we don't want you to fall into lazy habits that are going to cost you money over time, so it's important to evaluate this Rockets game correctly. Tonight's, again, the schedule is going to show Houston on the second night of back-to-back on the road, and it's going to be recorded that way by anyone who follows trends blindly. But be careful with that. The Rockets may be playing their second straight game on an opposing home floor, but they're also playing on the same court, staying in the same hotel. There's no travel involved. And when you talk about teams in unique circumstances, Houston, they're going to get a shoot-around today at the Staples Center, and that very rarely happens for teams on the second night of back-to-backs. They just don't have the time to do it. But the Rockets, of course, being that they're staying in town, staying at the same hotel, playing in the same building, they will have that opportunity for this ballgame. That being said, it may not mean a whole lot. This Houston team has some fundamental flaws right now, most notably in terms of their low post rebounding and defense. We saw them, what are they ranked? Number 25 in the NBA in defense right now. They were outboarded by 15 against the Lakers last night. And it's definitely a bad sign moving forward when the point guard, Kyle Lowry, has twice as many boards as anyone else on the team.
Let's go over to the college hardwoods tonight, and an injury a little bit off the radar screens that does matter. Josh Benson going to be lost for the season for Dayton. Starting power forward, leading rebounder, and leading scorer for the Flyers. A couple of matchup problems they now have. First, they're down to 9 scholarship players. Makes it a little bit difficult to practice. Not an easy transition for Archie Miller in his first season. And also tonight they play one of the most difficult teams in the conference to prepare for, St. Louis, and those terrific tactics of Rick Majerus. We'll let Miller set the stage here, hence the Miller tale that we alluded to at the start of tonight's show about what life could be like without Benson. Quoting Miller, Josh, unfortunately for him, was having a career best year as we entered conference play. He was, in my opinion, one of the best players in the conference and doing a great job on both ends of the floor. We obviously have new guys in different roles now. It's going to be a heck of a challenge. Difficult transition for Archie Miller in his first year at Dayton.
When we come back, it's time to head to the Wednesday night hardwoods as Money Time begins.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in Miami, where right now the Miami Heat -8 tonight at home against the Indiana Pacers, and we've seen a fairly significant early line move on this ballgame concerning Dwayne Wade's potential injury. Wade missed the shoot-around this morning, and he has been downgraded to doubtful for this evening with, I can't read what I wrote. What has he got?
He's got a foot injury.
Foot injury, thank you.
The line hasn't dropped as much as we thought that it would, of course. Several places did take it completely off the board. If he's going to be out, look for it to drop a little bit more later in the year. What we're seeing most teams do so far is erring on the side of caution in this unique short season. If you're Miami, you know you're in the playoffs. One individual game doesn't mean all that much, so we wouldn't be surprised if they gave him a little bit of rest. What will be interesting, though, is to see how this game flow goes. Last week, everyone got all excited about this Miami pace and space idea, which was nothing terribly new. They just wanted to play a little bit faster. But it's hard when you still have the same point guards who can't really push the ball and distribute. So they had some explosive openings against weak defensive teams, looked a little more dynamic than perhaps they really are. So what happened on Monday when they finally placed the good defense? Atlanta holds them to 21 points in the third quarter, 21 in the fourth quarter, wins the game outright on this court. We'd like to come in with Indiana here, but here's the conundrum. Indiana's defensive numbers have been terrific. Number one in the NBA. The rebounding's been good. It makes logical sense. They're a big, tough team with a lot of depth. But the problem, they faced very weak competition. Could the first time that Indiana has to step up in class a little bit be the time they lose their rhythm a little?
Yeah, I mean, we have to talk about this weak competition because who have they played? Let's see, they played the Pistons twice. They played Toronto. They played Cleveland and they played New Jersey. Over-under on playoff teams out of that grouping, half, and I'll probably take the under. Maybe Toronto can get an 8 seed or Detroit or something like that, but the bottom line is maybe Cleveland can. The bottom line is they've not faced a legitimate playoff team. They haven't certainly faced a championship caliber team, and they definitely haven't faced a championship caliber team coming off an embarrassing home loss in which they played extremely poorly in the second half. I think the Heat have the potential to be real moneymakers this year in a couple of different roles, and one of those roles is Miami coming off a bad game. I think they're going to put the pedal to the metal in these type of contests and on both ends of the court, which doesn't necessarily bode well for over players, but it could bode well for those who want to lay the chalk with Miami.
Let's head to the Verizon Center in our nation's capital. Big East showdown tonight, Marquette at Georgetown. Right now, Georgetown, the home team, a 4-point favorite. And a good way to talk about conference play and market adjustments with this particular game. Marquette had what looked like a skyrocket of a win a month ago at Wisconsin. So a Marquette team that's good, but not great, put a fantastic score out there. And the markets fell in love with them. What's happened since then? A bunch of dismal failures against the spread, and two outright losses as favorites, one against the pretty mediocre LSU team on the road, and a home game against Vanderbilt where they were just taken apart wire to wire. What happened in terms of that overreaction? Well, we find out subsequently. Winning at Wisconsin doesn't mean now what it looked like then. Iowa, a mediocre team that'll finish under 500 in the Big Ten, they went to Wisconsin, won by the same margin Marquette did. Tom Izzo and Michigan State had never beaten Bo Ryan in the Kohl Center, 0-8 going into last night. They got the outright win. So Marquette got overrated early in the markets. And now when we look at tonight's line, it makes us wonder, is Marquette still being overvalued?
Maybe. I mean, the last point spread that Marquette covered was that win against Wisconsin. That was more than a month ago. I believe it's 7 consecutive point spread failures since that single victory. That has left them overvalued ever since. And again, we talk about the power ratings and how they get adjusted. Yeah, they're ratcheting down slowly for this Marquette team, but they were too high to begin with, so it could take who knows how much time for the betting markets to adjust properly. Georgetown, I mean, we've seen this team hang tough against tough, tough competition. We saw them go on the road and get a we saw them won outright at Louisville on the road. We saw them knock off Memphis. We saw them knock off Alabama. They stepped up in class against physical, athletic, well-coached teams and gotten the job done. And it's a Georgetown team. They're loaded with finishers. You know, we talk about the seniors, Jason Clark and Henry Sims. You talk about the junior, Hollis Thompson. All three of them averaging in double digits. This Hoya squad, they have the veteran leadership. They have the go-to players during crunch time. They make their free throws. That's three things I like out of short home favorites.
And note the category that Teddy just talked about, because this is going to be a big part of the next 7 or 8 weeks in conference play. People always say, well, you can beat a bad line. You want to find the odds makers making mistakes. Well, when you got the Pomeroy ratings, the Sagarin ratings, how do they make a mistake anymore? We don't necessarily want them to this time of year. Sometimes we want the odds makers to be right, and it's all about end games. So if they tell us, well, this is a 4-point favorite, this is what this game looks like, this is where the power lays it out, good, then give us a 4-point favorite that doesn't turn the ball over and makes their free throws. Because if the odds makers are right, and if this team has the lead at the end of the game, or if it's near the point spread, you've got a good chance to be able to beat that spread. You're coming out of a lot of settings in the next couple of weeks where you're going to hear us say, we hope the odds makers are right, because if so, and you know what will follow along after the word so.
Let's go to Lawrence, Kansas, where right now the Jayhawks sitting about a 9-point favorite over their in-state rival, Kansas State. Of course, the last time these two teams met, it was all Kansas State. They led by double digits at halftime, rolled to a 16-point victory. They were 6-point home dogs in that ballgame against Kansas. So certainly Kansas will remember that defeat. But the question is, can they do anything about it? We've seen some vulnerability from this Jayhawk squad. And when we break down something like common opponents, well, these two teams have a common opponent this year. Kansas played Long Beach State at home. They won the game by 8. Kansas State played Long Beach State on a neutral floor. They won the game by 17.
A lot of you might not enjoy watching this one, but this is one of my favorites. the way these teams will get after each other. Two coaches who compete hard, who bring in players that will compete hard. I'm not sure if any team plays harder game in and game out than Kansas State under Frank Martin. He recruits that type of player. So this is not going to be pretty basketball to watch. It's not going to be fluid. This is not going to be like watching the Lakers and Celtics back in the 80s. This is going to be a game where when it's over, they may have to revarnish the court. Because when there's a loose ball tonight, you're going to see kids diving on that court. But what they may also have to do is repaint the rims, because there could be a lot of clanging going on. These may be two of the top 10 defensive teams in the nation all season. Kansas State's allowing 36.7% shooting. A big part of that, 65 block shots. Kansas is allowing 37.4. A big part of that, 70 block shots. So we see that these guys are going to defend. The question is tonight, who's going to score? Kansas State doesn't have anybody that averages over 12.5 points a game. So now in your toughest challenge so far, where's your go-to guy? For Kansas, you've been getting big numbers out of Thomas Robinson. Just had 30 points and 21 rebounds against North Dakota in the last game. No one had done that in Kansas in 50 years. A guy named Wayne Hightower did it. And a guy named Chamberlain did it a few times in the 50s. If you guys are young, just watching the show for one of the few times, Will Chamberlain was pretty good. So can anybody score tonight? Is this just going to be one of these ugly slugging matches producing ugly basketball? Or is there one team that might find a better rhythm and take control?
I'm not convinced that we're going to see either team find much offensive rhythm here. But I want to go back to a point we were talking about in the Marquette-Georgetown game, talking about how when the power rating number is slightly off or the market is slightly off, it can remain there for a handful of contests. And we've seen that for Kansas over the course of the last month. They've had 2 point spread covers in the last month. One came at USC, and USC right now, they're really struggling to score at all. It's not been a pretty season for the Trojans thus far on the basketball court. The other win and cover came at home against Ohio State when the Buckeyes were without arguably the best player in the nation this year in terms of Jared Sullinger. So both wins for the Jayhawks that have prevented them from having a long ATS losing streak may have little asterisks next to them. I'm not convinced Kansas is going to be able to win this game by margin.
When we come back, it's homecoming for a lot of West Virginia players at the Orange Bowl in Miami. That doesn't make any sense, does it? We'll explain that in Money Time Part 2. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name of my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Let's go to the Orange Bowl in Miami for tonight's showdown between West Virginia and Clemson. The current number, Clemson -3. We've seen the Tigers get bet up from an opener of Pick'em when these numbers first came out, close to a month ago. And the total's been bet up as well. We're looking at 64s across the board. If you bet this yesterday, you could have had a 61.5.
So glad he got through that opening without any more John Denver. Would have been totally intolerable.
He was begging me during the break, no John Denver, please, no John Denver, ever. All right, I'll never do John Denver again on the show.
And if you guys were here, you would have been begging also. I was doing that on your behalf. We are your advocates here on Vegas Sports Day. Shouldn't be a BCS game this year. Neither team has earned it. But what's going to make it fun to watch? Think about BCS prospects for next season. West Virginia only has 6 senior starters. Geno Smith, a bunch of those receivers are returning. And look at the upside that this Clemson offense may have. Taj Boyd, the quarterback, he's a sophomore. Look at these two receivers, Sammy Watkins, the freshman, DeAndre Hopkins, only a sophomore. Those two by themselves, 139 catches, 1,924 yards, 15 touchdown receptions. They could be dynamite next season. Still an entertaining game tonight, and a little bit of added color here. West Virginia has 18 players from South Florida on their roster, which might not make a whole lot of sense. If you grew up in South Florida and you got a chance to play just about anywhere, why are you heading to Morgantown? Not a bad little town, as college towns go. It's where I learned to first love Chinese food, which is a long story for another show. But here's the story. Miramar High School in Miami is one of the best high school football programs in the country. They've won the state championship 2 of the last 3 years, came in 2nd the year they didn't win it. Who's the head coach? Damon Cogdell. He was a linebacker at West Virginia and a star player in his playing days. That's their little pipeline. So for a lot of these kids, there's a homecoming tonight. It's a chance to play in front of a lot of friends and family that they were able to get tickets for, and it's a big recruiting trip for Dana Holgorsen. What he wants to show all of this town in South Florida is, we throw the football here at West Virginia. Come up north. Yeah, the winters aren't so good, but you'll get a chance to put up big numbers.
And we talk about West Virginia's ability to throw the football. The game that stands out to me was their game against LSU. LSU with the number two ranked defense in the country this year. Obviously, they're playing for the national championship. And West Virginia didn't just dink and dunk down the field against them. They threw the ball all over the field. Geno Smith had a monster game. He threw for more than 450 yards against LSU's defense. Now we compare LSU's defense against Clemson's defense. Well, prior to the ACC championship game, Clemson's defense had allowed 34, 37, 28, 31, 38, and 45 points in their previous six games. Not a shutdown effort in the bunch. And many of those contests came against some second-tier ACC offenses, a team like Maryland, who were moving the ball up and down the field against this Clemson defense. So there's certainly a solid chance here for Geno Smith and the Mountaineers' passing game to move the ball effectively, and especially since their running game is a big issue tonight. They're going to be without their leading rusher, Dustin Garrison. He had 742 yards on the ground, 5.5 yards per carry, although his biggest game came against Bowling Green, which doesn't really count that much against this level of defense. Sean Alston, he's averaged 4.4 yards per carry, 339 yards on the season, is going to have to step up for the Mountaineers to have any sort of running game in this contest whatsoever.
So where do we go tonight? It's a tough call in the Orange Bowl. Both teams are a little bit erratic. Should be a wide open game, but the time to bet the total was yesterday. That value has kind of gone away. But while this is being played, you should have a winner in your pocket from the college hardwoods. Let's go back to Marquette Georgetown, and let's look at Georgetown at that -4 as the Vegas sports they play today. A number that's short based on the perception that Marquette was better than they really are. Marquette's got athleticism and they run the floor well. Not a good half-court team. If you're going to play Georgetown on their court this year, there's only one speed that game is going to be played at. Look for Marquette to struggle, have a difficult time scoring, and for Georgetown to pull away for an easy win.
And that's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition of Vegas Sports Day. Thank you so much for taking time to spend with us here on the show. For Malinsky, I'm Sobranski. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again mañana.